diagrams to calculate the terms in the weak coupling expansion for a very, very simple model. Okay, so the thing that I was looking at was some integral I of epsilon, okay, and okay, we looked at that model, and we expanded this as a series in powers of epsilon. Okay, and what we did was the following. First, we expanded that integral as a series in powers of epsilon just by expanding this term and integrating term by term. And we ended up with a divergent series. Okay, and then here, these were the coefficients in the series, okay? And these coefficients here, a sub n, are growing very roughly like n factorial times some constant to the n. So this is a divergent series, okay? And then we showed that we could sum that series, okay? At least numerically, I demonstrated to you that we could sum that series using Pade methods. And then I showed you that there was a diagrammatic interpretation that we showed that there was a set of Feynman rules, okay? And the rules were, the graphical rules were that there was a four-point vertex, okay? And the amplitude of the vertex was minus 24 epsilon, okay? And that there was a line, a line, just a simple line, a two-ended line, and this had the amplitude 1, okay? And we drew the graphs, and we were able to construct those A's. And we argued that that A sub n, is the sum of, over all graphs, sum of all graphs having n vertices, okay? So, you know, this is a sort of, in this extremely simple case, this is a model of how you solve a quantum field theory, you know? You take a quantum field theory expressed as an integral, you acknowledge that this is a very, very hard problem, you put in a small, this is a small perturbation parameter that is inserted, okay, in order to reduce this quantum field theory to an infinite series where each term in the series is very easy to calculate, relatively easy to calculate, either by expanding the integral or using field theory methods, namely diagrams, we could calculate those terms. You might say that, you know, one thing you might say is that you're very unhappy that this is a divergent series. And you might say, well, can't we sort of solve this field theory using a convergent series? And you remember what I reminded you of was the thing that we talked about very early on. We said, suppose we had this funny polynomial equation, okay, which we needed to solve. And remember, the first thing we did was to insert an epsilon over here. Okay? We said that's a strong coupling expansion. And we got a series. We could add it up. And we could find the root. The root of this equation was x equals 0.755... Okay? And so we expanded that in powers of epsilon. But remember, we could have also put an epsilon in here, okay? And the problem with putting an epsilon in here was that this was this series was a divergent, rapidly divergent series. Remember, when you put the epsilon in here, the series looked like I forget exactly 1 minus 5 epsilon plus 35 epsilon squared, and so on. So this was a rapidly divergent series. And this was a weak coupling approximation. This is a strong coupling approximation. Okay? Now, really, the only difference between this problem here and this problem here is that this is a 5 and a 1, fifth power and first power, and that's a 4 and a 2, fourth power and second power. But, you know, we could try to repeat what we did here, because this worked very well. This gave a convergent series. Okay. So, you know, you might say, well, why don't we just do the same thing over here? Why do we have to do a weak coupling expansion here? Why don't we put the epsilon in here? Seems perfectly reasonable. Okay? Because now we should get a convergent series. Okay? You understand why this... Wait, we better say it again. Why is this a singular perturbation problem? Why do we expect this to give a divergent series? Just, what's the reason? Say it again. If epsilon is negative, it diverges. Okay, so exactly right. So you can see that as epsilon runs from being positive to being negative, this integral no longer converges. Okay, so you see something abrupt happening at epsilon equals 0. So you might say, oh, wait a minute. Why are we doing a weak coupling perturbation expansion? Why don't we just do a strong coupling perturbation expansion? Let's insert the epsilon in a different way. Why don't we consider a new function, I of epsilon, which is the square root of 2 over pi, just as before, but let's put the epsilon in front of the t squared term. You know, why don't we have e to the minus t to the 4 times e to the minus epsilon t squared over 2? Now, this is a regular perturbation expansion. And again, you can see why it's a regular perturbation expansion, because nothing special happens in the vicinity of epsilon equals 0. This seems perfectly obvious. In fact, why don't we solve field theory this way? Yeah.
Do we know how to calculate the integral of e to the minus 4?
Yes. Okay. We do. So let's do that. Okay? I mean, that's clearly the right question you're asking. Let's do that. Let's see if we can do that. Okay? So let's expand this guy, do exactly what we did before, but expand this guy in powers of epsilon. This seems like an obvious thing to do now, right? So let's replace this guy by the sum from n equals 0 to infinity, minus 1 to the n, epsilon to the n over 2 to the n, times t to the 2n, right? T to the 2n over n factorial. Okay? Well, kind of obvious, right? And so let's see. Let's put it over here. Okay, so that says that I of epsilon, if we just interchange orders of summation and integration, and now this interchange is perfectly valid because we expect this series to be convergent, in fact, uniformly convergent, and it is. Okay? So what is I of epsilon? It's the sum from n equals 0 to infinity, and let's get all the numbers right, minus 1 to the n, minus 1 to the n, epsilon to the n, 2 to the n, n factorial, da 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 da. And then we have an integral, dt e to the minus t to the 4 times t to the 2n. Okay? And basically, you asked me, the question you asked me was, you know, could I even do the integral when n equals 0? But in general, we better be able to do, this is a waste of time unless we can do this integral, which is a slightly more difficult integral. But we can. Okay, so how do we do the integral? Well, let's substitute, say, t to the 4 equals s. Okay, so t is equal to s to the 1 quarter, dt is s to the 1/4 minus 1 times 1/4 ds. Okay, that's a natural substitution. And then this guy is the integral from 0 to infinity, minus 1 to the n, epsilon to the n, 2 to the n, n factorial. Okay. Now, there's this factor of 1/4. Okay. ds e to the minus s. And now let's find what is the power of s. First of all, there's a t to the 2n, which means that we have s to the n over 2, right? Minus, let's see, plus 1/4 minus 1. Okay? Do you know how to do that integral? This is from 0 to infinity. Do you know how to do that integral? Say it again? It's a gamma function. That's right. So remember, gamma of x, just definition of gamma of x, is the integral from 0 to infinity, dt e to the minus t, t to the x minus 1. Okay? So this integral we do know how to do. This is gamma of n over 2 plus 1/4. Okay? And now we have to ask, is this indeed a convergent series? Okay.
No.
Say again?
No.
No? Are you saying, no, this is definitely a convergent series. In fact, this series has an infinite radius of convergence. This is a wonderful series. Nothing wrong with this series at all. It's great. Why? Because the nth term in the series, apart from powers of n, powers of, you know, constants like minus 1 to the n, 2 to the n, it basically goes for large n, as n goes to infinity, it goes roughly like gamma of n over 2 divided by n factorial. Gamma of n over 2 is roughly the square root. This is roughly the square root of n factorial. Okay? So it goes, the nth term goes roughly like 1 over the square root of n factorial, okay? Which is great. This is great. This has an infinite radius of convergence. So we're very happy puppies, right? This is great. We don't need to worry about divergent series. Yeah?
So if something funky happens to the square root 2 on pi?
Yeah, that seems to have evaporated, doesn't it? Yeah. See, maybe, don't look. Okay. You see that? What kind of... Oh, it was actually there all the time, but it was written in invisible chalk. I can't help that. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry? Gamma of x goes like gamma, you know, n factorial is, you know, gamma of plus 1. Yeah, but when you add a constant to the argument of a gamma function, you know, gamma of n plus alpha for large n is roughly gamma of n times n to the alpha. Okay, this is just an algebraic correction.
About equal to n factorial square root.
Why is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's look at it. Apart from constants to the n.
Yeah.
Why is that true? Because for a large argument, you know, gamma of some big number, L, okay, is L to the L, e to the minus L. Okay? So if you want to put an L over 2, then that just means L over 2 to the L over 2. So this gives you, you know, L to the L over 2. Apart from constants to the L, okay, so you see that? So the key thing is that there's an L, not L to the L, but L to the L over 2 power. Okay, so this is rough, apart from, you know, there's some constants to the N in here, you know, alpha to the N, something like that. But we don't care about powers. Powers are insignificant compared with N to the N, N to the N over 2. Right? This is just a fixed number to the power N, This contains an n to the power n, which is wildly dominating over it. Okay? So the most important contribution is that this series goes roughly, apart from constants to the n, times epsilon to the n, this goes roughly like n to the n over 2 in the denominator. And so this series has an infinite radius of convergence. Okay? So this is terrific. So why don't we do field theory this way? This is what we've done is absolutely stupid. Why did we put in an epsilon here when we could have put in an epsilon here? This is a convergent series. We don't have to worry about clever tricks like pot A for summing divergent series. Yeah?
Aren't we kind of just moving the problem somewhere else? Because actually compute the gamma function, we had a Taylor series which wasn't itself divergent.
No, but I mean, never mind. I agree with you that these numbers are irrational numbers. Okay, these are irrational numbers, but we can look it up in a book. We can look up the exact value. I mean, you can sum this series on your computer, and the first 20 terms in this series will give a very accurate answer, a really, really precise answer. Okay, because we have a convergent series. It has an infinite radius of convergence. So this is beautiful. Okay? So let's ask, if we were doing quantum field theory and we were trying to work out the graphs for this problem, well, for this problem, for this way of inserting epsilon, what are the Feynman rules? The Feynman rules now are completely different. And it would be nice to find out exactly what those Feynman rules are. Okay? So let's go about doing that. So this is the integral that we're looking at, and we would like to try to deduce the Feynman rules. So we have I of epsilon, the second epsilon, this is maybe I1 and this is I2. Okay? So this I2 is 2 over pi square root. And we have an integral dt from 0 to infinity, e to the minus t to the 4, e to the minus epsilon t squared over 2. Now, what did we do? Remember what we did last time. We used this trick to reduce this to something that had a graphical interpretation. So how did we do that? The trick was to insert e to the some source term times t and evaluate this at j equals 0. Okay, so we just put in the number 1. Okay, then the next thing we did was to pull out this term. Of course, previously we pulled out this term, but now we're pulling out this term here. Okay, because now this is the perturbative term. So now we write this as the square root of 2 over pi times e to the minus epsilon over 2 times d squared dj squared. Okay, and then we have an integral from 0 to infinity, dt e to the minus t to the 4 times plus jt. Now, what did we do last time? Last time, we completed the square, okay? And we can, if you like, we can be careful. You know, we can put in a 1/2 and integrate from minus infinity to infinity. Then we completed the square. We did the integral, but now we can't complete the square because it isn't a square. It's a fourth power. Yeah.
The integral to minus infinity, because the term j
kind of. Aha, interesting point. So what we will do is we'll just go back to the original definition of the theory and put in a minus infinity to infinity with a 1/2 before we insert the j. Okay? And then when we insert it, it doesn't matter. Okay. So what do?
Could you make it a t squared?
But now it's not quite so simple. Because now, if you, I understand, you'd like to say, oh, you mean put a t squared in here. Ah, but then that's a different, then we can't pull this term out as d squared dj squared. That's no longer going to work. So we seem to have a problem here. And the problem is, in general, in quantum field theory, the only kind of integral, in quantum field theory, we're talking about functional integrals, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Okay. The only kind of functional integral we know how to do is a Gaussian. This is not really a Gaussian. So of trying to evaluate the integral by completing the square looks really difficult. But is there something we can do? Well, there is. We can just push forward stubbornly. Okay, and this is something you can do in quantum field theory as well. I insist that we are going to evaluate that integral, damn it. Okay? I can't evaluate it by completing the square, but I'm going to evaluate it. So there. Okay? So what I'm going to do is replace e to the jt by the series j to the n, t to the n over n factorial. Okay? Sum from 0 to infinity. Okay? And you saw just before, you saw that we could evaluate integrals like that. Okay? Okay. So how do we evaluate the integral? First of all, let's interchange summation and integration. 0 to infinity, j to the n over n factorial. And now we have an integral to do whose form is the integral. This is from minus infinity to infinity, dt t to the n, e to the minus t to the 4. That's the integral that we have to do. Okay? And by the way, what you can see immediately is that when n is odd, this vanishes, right? Because this is an odd function. So we immediately can assume right away that n is an even number. Okay, you all agree? N must be even. So in fact, let's sum over just even n. So I'm going to, this is j to the 2n, 2n factorial. Okay, and now because n is even, I can take away that half, that silly factor of 1/2, okay, that we had to put in. See, this is exactly what typically happens. So we can take away the half, and we're left with an integral from 0 to infinity, dt, t to the 2n, e to the minus t to the 4. Okay? Which looks kind of like the integral that we were evaluating over here. Okay, in fact, it looks very much like that integral. Okay, so I can replace this. I know what this integral gives me. It gives me 1/4 times gamma of n plus, where is it? It's n plus a quarter, n over 2 plus a quarter. N over 2 plus 1/4. So I did the integral. But this is, this is not good yet. Why not? Do I have a graphical interpretation for this? What do I have to do next? Yeah, we want it in the form of an exponential. Now let's see, how are we going to do that? Tell you what, let's pull out the first term in this series so that the first term in the series is just 1. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull out this factor of 1/4, pull it out front, okay? And I'm going to pull out a factor of gamma of 1/4, and I will divide then by gamma of 1/4. Okay, you all with me? And now, let's see. Oh, let's see. We did this right. Good. Okay, so now, here's what I propose to do. This is a series of the form, you know, alpha sub n j to the 2n. Okay? And alpha 0, by construction, alpha 0 is 1. Well, I'm going to write this as e to the sum from n equals 0 to infinity, j to the 2n times some constant. Now, this is a lot of algebra, okay? But I can rewrite this series as an exponential of another series. Say, what would you like to call it? Let's call it v sub n. So as v sub 2n, those are the coefficients of j sub 2n, over 2n factorial. Okay? So the v's are combinations of gamma functions. They're very complicated. Okay? So do you see what I did? Does everybody understand what I just did? So there's a formula, you know. V0, of course, is 1. But, you know, there isn't, this is n equals 1 to infinity. So there isn't any V0. Okay. But V2 is what you get if you expand this into a series and compare it with this series. Okay? So the first term in the series, V2, would be, you know, to find V2, we know that V2 over 2, that term in the series, if you expand it out, has to agree with gamma of 1 plus 1/4 over gamma of 1/4. Okay? Times 1 over 2 factorial or whatever. Okay? So that I can exponentiate this series and write it as a different series. Now, for the first time, and all this has to be evaluated at j equals 0. And now, for the first time, I have a set of graphical rules. What are the graphical rules for this theory? Okay, you have a question.
Why is it that we are bothering to rewrite
as an exponential? Because then we have an interpretation of this as a set of graphs.
Yes, but like, even in the normal expansion, in the weak coupling expansion, we have the exponential of some j squared.
Yeah.
But like the easiest way to compute the derivatives of that term when j equals 0 is to expand the exponential into the scalar series.
No. The easiest, well, we're taking the position that we want to express this theory in terms of graphs. So we're trying to identify the graphical rules. Okay? This graphical rule tells me that I have a two-ended object whose amplitude is minus epsilon. And I will treat this as a line. This tells me that I have a bunch of objects with 2n connections to it. The number of connections are either 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and so on. And the amplitude for these objects is the number v sub 2n. Okay? Is that clear? So let me write it down. Here are the rules for what we just did. We have a line with two n's. So this is L2. And what is the amplitude for this line? It is minus epsilon. Okay? So every time you write down a line, you have to write down the amplitude minus epsilon. Previously, we had an epsilon in the vertex. But now the epsilon is in the line. Okay? Then we have vertices. And these are funny numerical things depending on gamma functions. So we have a V2, a V4, V6, V8, and so on. It's pretty horrible. Okay? But we now have a set of Feynman rules. How do we organize the Feynman diagrams? Can anybody tell me the first diagram? What is the first Feynman diagram? The first order in perturbation theory. This corresponds to epsilon to the first power. This must be a diagram containing, since it's epsilon to the first power, it must be a diagram containing just one line. Right? So what is the amplitude? The amplitude of this graph. So what's the graph? What does the graph look like? How do you make a graph using just one line?
Yeah. Circle.
It's, say again?
A circle.
A circle, that's right. So this is the graph. It's just one line. And it must connect to a vertex there. And what vertex is it? It must be V2. Okay? This must be a V2. So the amplitude for this graph is minus epsilon. That's for the line. And for the vertex, it is V2. And for the symmetry number, what is the symmetry number of this graph?
2.
So I write down 1/2. So the answer is minus 1/2 epsilon V2. And that's the first term in the perturbation expansion. That's it. OK? You have a question. Yeah.
On this exponent. With the left exponential that has the derivative, yeah.
That's
on
right.
The right exponential.
And then
and we get only the epsilon to the first order term. Then don't you have like infinitely many v's?
Of course. So I have infinitely many v's, but you can't draw a graph any of the other v's because there must be only one line.
Yeah, doesn't that mean that we're missing something with this graph representation?
No. No, not at all. Would you like to make a graph, for example, using a v4? This is a vertex having 4 connections, but you only have one line.
Well, I understand that it's impossible.
What's that?
I understand that it's graphically impossible, but...
Yeah, so this is all the graphs. This is all the graphs to first order in epsilon. That's it. That's it. We've drawn them all. Okay, how about epsilon squared? Can you tell me all the graphs that occur for epsilon squared? So these are all graphs having 2 lines. Okay? Which graphs would occur?
Why did you have the interpretation of this, say, one line rather than, say, a quadriline or whatever you said before?
Oh, because I can think better with a two-ended line. So I decided to choose this term here to represent a line insertion because this was a power of 2. Okay? I mean, we could think of these V's as all different types of lines, you know, 4-legged lines, 6-legged lines, and 1-2 vertex. We could do that, but I don't think as well like that. Okay? Are you with me? Are you following what I'm doing here? Yeah. This formula here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the question?
I understand how you write it as an exponential.
Look, if I have if I have a series of the form sum from 0 to infinity of a sub n x to the n, you're telling me that you have a problem rewriting it as e to the sum of b sub n x to the n. That's what you're telling me?
Yes.
That's all I'm doing.
Yes.
Okay, so let's expand. So the first term in this series, A0, we took to be 1 to make it easy. So the first term in this series is not there. Okay, it begins with 1 to infinity. Okay, so just expand this out. If you expand this, this is 1 plus the sum of bn x to the n, from 1 to infinity, plus the sum from, plus bn x to the n squared over 2 factorial, plus. Okay? Expand this out. The first term in this series is b1x. The next term in the series is b2x squared, and so on. The first term in this series is b2, is b1 squared over 2x squared, and so on. Okay? Now I compare the terms in the series. The first term in this series is 1. Then it goes a1x plus a2x squared, and so on. Okay? The first term in the series is 1, 1. They agree. The next term in the series is a1x, which agrees with b1. So a1 equals b1.
Okay.
Okay? The next term in the series is a2. So a2 is equal to b1 squared over 2 plus b2, and so on. Okay? I'm just exponentiating a Taylor series, that's all. Okay? So, so what are the graphs corresponding to epsilon squared? Can you tell me? Yeah, what would you?
I think you have a figure of 8.
A figure of 8, okay. So it looks like this. And what is the vertex here?
Four vertex.
A 4 vertex. So that's V4 and 2 lines. That's the key point. Okay, there are 2 lines because this is of order epsilon squared. What else?
You have a circle with 2 nodes in it.
A circle with a node here and a node here.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is this dot, this is V2 and this is V2, those 2 vertices. Okay.
And 2 separate circles of like the first order.
Okay, so something like this. Mm-hmm. That's it. So now you found 3 graphs, okay, and this is a V2 and this is a V2. We need the symmetry numbers for these graphs. Okay, so the symmetry number here is 1 eighth. We know that very well. The symmetry number for this, what's the symmetry number for that?
Eight.
Yeah, say it again?
1/4.
1/4, that's right. 1/4, because you can interchange these 2 lines. And independently, you can interchange those 2 vertices. So the symmetry number is 1/4. And here, the symmetry number is?
8.
1/8. That's right. Symmetry number is 1/8. In all cases, there are 2 lines. And the amplitude for a line is minus epsilon. So the line, so we have an L2 squared here, which is epsilon squared. And those are all the graphs that contribute to the next term of the perturbation series. Okay? This is how you do field theory and the strong coupling limit. You can see it's much more complicated, but you can do it. Okay? You can actually do that. And you will not wind up with a divergent series, you'll wind up with a convergent series. This is quite subtle stuff, but you can do that. Yeah?
So why is this not used?
It is used. It does appear, but there's a subtlety. In quantum field theory, we don't have an integral here. We have a functional integral. Okay? And when we do this, when we evaluate this as a series in powers of j and evaluate the integral and then re-exponentiate, there are powers of the lattice spacing. Okay? Which I will show you if you're interested. I can show you in detail afterward. And so what you end up with...
So you're saying that if you actually discretize the function?
If you have to discretize it to do the integral, and what you end up with is that in the formula for the vertices, see here the vertices just turned out to be simple algebraic combinations of gamma functions, gamma 1/4, gamma things like that. Okay. But if you do this for... a quantum field theory, the formula for the vertex, you know, B sub 2n, will contain, if we did this for a 5 to 4 field theory, so the formula for this vertex would contain a bunch of gammas, just as we did, but in addition, there would be some powers of the lattice spacing, A. Do you know what that means? Do you know what a lattice spacing is? Have you come across it? You've seen that. Okay, so there's some powers of the lattice spacing, and that lattice spacing is in the denominator. Okay, so there's some power associated with n. You know, like there's an a squared or an a cubed. Now in the limit, as the lattice spacing goes to zero, this, we have to figure out what in the world that means. Okay, so you see that the graphs will all be horribly divergent in the limit as the lattice spacing goes to zero. Turns out that's not a problem. But it has to be dealt with. And the way we usually deal with it is that we rewrite the perturbation series using pad A, and then we have a ratio of polynomials divided by polynomials. And then we rationalize the lattice spacing. Okay, each of the terms in these polynomials will have powers of the lattice spacing in the denominator. We rationalize it so that the lattice spacing is now, you know, now there are no more inverse powers of the lattice spacing. And then we let the lattice spacing go to zero. So you have to make sense out of it. This is called a high temperature expansion. Okay, so it's a high temperature lattice expansion. And indeed, you can do this. Okay, but it's non-trivial. Okay, so in this case, where we don't have any lattice spacing, we do have a graphical interpretation. This is much more subtle than a weak coupling expansion. So if you really insist on having a convergent series, you have to pay for it by having powers of the lattice spacing in the denominator. You have to try to interpret what is going on. So you have to extrapolate to zero lattice spacing. This is non-trivial, okay? But it's very interesting, and it's an alternative to the usual Feynman diagram expansion. Yeah?
Yeah, okay. Can we cannot use renormalization for this?
This is not a simple renormalization problem, because things are becoming more and more divergent as you include higher and higher vertices. As you go to higher order in perturbation theory, there are more vertices and more powers of the lattice spacing. Okay? It is a kind of, what you have to do is a kind of renormalization. It's really an extrapolation to zero lattice spacing. So you can only make sense of this as a, in field theory, as a, as Feynman diagrams on a lattice. Okay, it is only well defined on a lattice, and then you have to go to zero lattice spacing. So this is a non-trivial trick. But as a trick for evaluating an integral using Feynman diagrams, there's no problem. Okay, we did it right there. No problem. Yeah?
If you use this method, could you have dimension full coupling constants? Because you're not expanding cows, birds, or still, is there in the...
Yes, we have, when we put in an epsilon here, this, in principle, has dimensions, okay? So, you know, what appears up in the integral, what appears written up in the integral here, everything in an exponential must be dimensionless. So indeed, we have to regard t as a dimensionless quantity and epsilon as a dimensionless quantity, or if you have dimensional quantities, then you have to rescale to remove the dimensions, okay? You can replace t by t times the dimensional constant so that the new thing up in the exponential is all terms in the exponential are dimensionless. Right? That, of course, has to be true. Okay. You have to worry about that. Here, we're treating t as a dimensionless number. There's nothing here. It's an epsilon we're treating as a dimensionless constant. Okay. Okay, so if things had dimensions, we would just do a scaling. There would be some mass term over here, and then we'd have to replace t by t over m to some power. So then it would become dimensions. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So over there, since you have like j to the 2n, mm-hmm. doesn't that mean that only 2n vertices are allowed?
That's right. That's right. We do not have a one vertex. You remember, we do not have a one vertex because we had an integral from minus infinity to infinity, and the odd powers of t vanished. Okay, so all the odd vertices dropped out in this particular calculus. They didn't have to drop out, but they did.
Sorry, I thought that has something to do with the number of vertices that you can have.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, yeah.
Okay, I didn't really get what does this discretizing integral appear? It's just so that you can understand. Does there something?
Why the why?
Why did we need to? Why do they in quantum field need to select this spacing and discretizing? I think that's
to make sense. That's right. This integral here in quantum field theory. We beat the problem down to doing an integral over, you know, an integral. What was left here was an integral of e to the minus t to the fourth, and then there would be plus a time in the exponential plus jt. But in a quantum field theory, that would be a functional integral d phi, okay, e to the minus integral dt in d dimensions times phi to the 4 plus j phi, okay? And phi depends on t, and j depends on t.
So we convert it to a normal integral.
So what we do is we say, we don't know how to do that functional integral because it's not Gaussian. So how are we going to do it? We say a functional integral is defined as a product of ordinary integrals, one at each lattice point. Okay, so this is an integral d phi phi k, where k is the kth lattice point. Okay, and in the exponential here, we have e to the minus, and now we discretize. Okay, so this integral is really a sum. It's really a sum, and if we're in d dimensions, dt is replaced by the lattice spacing to the dimension power, to the power d. Okay? And this is phi k to the fourth plus j phi k. Okay? And then we argue, and this is the sum over all lattice spacings, then we argue that, look, an exponential of a sum, that's really a product. So this is a product over all lattice spacings, or over all lattice points, k, times an integral of the type d, and instead of writing d phi k, allow me to write ds k, or so just an ordinary, you know, an ordinary integral, okay? And I don't have to put an index on it, because the only place where there's an index, all the integrals are exactly the same. All these integrals are integrals from minus infinity to infinity, e to the minus lattice spacing to the d power s to the fourth plus j, that's the thing where the lattice spacing is, j k s. Okay? And this is the integral that we just did. But we were doing a quantum field theory that lives only on exactly one lattice point. Now, we have an infinite product here. Okay? So, how do we make sense out of that? Well, this says you take a product, okay? But we evaluated this integral by expanding in powers of j and then re-exponentiating. And then we have to multiply all those exponentials together. And when you multiply them together, once again, they become integrals. But with lattice spacing corrections in it. There's this a to the d that's floating around. And now, when you evaluate this integral, there are going to be powers of a to the d in the denominator. That's the problem. That's the problem. That's where the lattice spacing comes in. Okay? That's a quick and dirty answer, but that's where the lattice spacing comes in. So this is a very interesting approach to quantum field theory, because the advantage is that the series that we get will be a convergent series, not divergent. But to get convergent series, you really have to pay for it, because this is very complicated.
Okay. Makes you wonder about the use of quantum gravity and stuff.
Makes you wonder about?
About the whole idea of discretizing action.
Well, you have to discretize, because that's the only way to define a functional integral in the first place. So a functional integral is a very sophisticated concept. I agree with you. Okay. Now, the question is, how do we do quantum field theory, not for just integrals, but for a quantum field theory? And I want to show you how to do that before we quit today. So the objective is now, I mean, I've shown you now lots of different ways to do, to use graphs to do calculations, but now I want to show you how to do it in an actual quantum field theory, not a quantum field theory that lives at one point, but a quantum field theory that lives on a line. Okay, so this is now pretty sophisticated. And if we're doing one-dimensional quantum field theory, this is quantum field theory with time. That's the one dimension, but no space. Okay? So now this quantum field theory describes a world that is evaluating, that is moving in time. There's an evolution, a time evolution, okay? But it's sitting at one point in space. Okay? And this is called quantum mechanics. Okay? So quantum mechanics is quantum field theory in time only, no space. Okay? So what do I mean by time only? Well, in quantum mechanics, you know, there's an operator x, which is a function of time. And there's an operator p, which is a function of time. Okay? And you build the Hamiltonian out of x and p, right? So for example, a nice simple Hamiltonian to build would be p squared over 2 plus, say, x squared over 2. And if we want to make it a non-trivial quantum field theory, we could have an x to the 4 term. And you've seen this before. This is called the anharmonic oscillator. Okay, it's a wonderful test model for quantum field theory. And it is the one-dimensional version of a phi to the 4 quantum field theory. Okay? So this lives just in one dimension. Now, the simplest thing to calculate is the ground state energy. And I have shown you, so the Schrodinger equation, let's think, if you didn't know quantum field theory, you'd write down the Schrodinger equation, minus d squared over 2 plus x squared over 2, d squared dx squared over 2, plus x squared over 2, plus x to the fourth psi equals e psi. That's the time-independent Schrodinger equation. And you might be interested in calculating the ground state energy, which we can call E0. Okay? And do you remember that we said, nope, you can't solve that problem exactly. It's a very hard problem. So what we did was to insert a perturbation parameter in here. And I showed you how to solve this differential equation perturbatively. And do you remember, it was a little messy, but what you had to do was to expand the energy as a series in powers of epsilon, and the eigenfunction as a series in powers of epsilon. And first you calculate E0, and then you calculate psi 0, and then you calculate E1 and psi 1 and E2 and psi 2. And you go back and forth, and it's kind of messy. Okay? And I told you what the answer was. The answer was that E0 of epsilon is 1 half plus 3 quarters epsilon minus 21 eighths epsilon squared plus 333 over 16 epsilon cubed, and so on. And this is a divergent series. Okay? It's a divergent series. Okay? Now, I showed you how to do that. The question is, can we do this calculation using graphs? Because this is now a real, honest-to-God quantum field theory. So now I don't know how much you know. And how much, I don't want to repeat what you know, but there may be things, I'm not sure. But you know that you have written down a functional integral to represent this theory. Has that been done?
Yeah.
It has. Okay. So does this make sense to you, d phi e to the minus the action. Is this okay? Okay. And we're in one dimension, so this is dt, okay, an integral over all time. Okay, we're working in one-dimensional space-time. And now, what is the action? It is phi dot squared over 2 plus phi squared over 2 plus phi to the 4. That is the functional integral. Okay.
So you've done a big quotation
already. Yes, and I'm working. This is a Euclidean space functional integral. Okay, so I'm not writing down an I over here. Okay, so I'm working in Euclidean space. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
that's okay. All right, you got to help me here because I'm not sure how much you can say. Okay, so now, what is this equal to? That's the functional integral. What is the functional integral equal? Does anybody know? Has anybody been told what it equals? I mean, you write down that functional integral, but now, what's it? What is it equal to? Anybody know? Yeah. What is it equal?
What's the partition function? Right?
So this is the partition function. What is it equal?
Infinity.
Say it again.
Infinity.
Well, I will. So there's some discussion that you've had, and there's a normalization in here, so it's not infinite. Okay. So it's equal to something, but what is it equal to?
Sorry, do you mean in terms of what you've been doing before, in terms of an exponential?
Not from this course, but from, I mean, when you've written down this partition function, it equals something.
Yes.
Does anybody know what it equals?
10 to the minus 3 e.
Very good. Okay. Say it again now, louder. E to the
minus free energy.
The free energy, but that's not dimensionally correct. This is equal to e to the minus. So what is the free energy? The free energy is this, the ground state energy. That's it, E0. But that's not, this is not dimensionally correct, right? This has units of energy. In this theory, H bar is 1. I haven't written down a 1 over H bar, so H bar is 1. But you've got to make this dimensionless.
Some delta T.
Yes, it's something times. It's something having the units of time. It's the volume of space in general. Okay, it's the volume of one-dimensional space, which has units of time. So this is time times energy, which is dimensionless, or that is, has units of h-bar. Okay, but h-bar is 1. There would be typically some h-bar here. Okay, but h-bar is 1. So this suggests that if we can calculate this integral here, if we can calculate this integral, we know the ground state energy of the theory. Now, we already know the ground state energy, but the question is, you know, you haven't calculated it two ways. And this, the advantage of this is that you're going to see that we can calculate it. I mean, here is the down-to-earth calculation, just using perturbation theory. The question is, can we get this answer, the free energy, using Feynman diagrams? And we need to know just one fact. Okay, what do we need to do? You notice, if we're calculating the free energy, how do we solve for the free energy? We've got to take the log of both sides, right? To take the log of both sides. So we see that the free energy E is minus 1 over the volume of space, 1 over the volume of space, times the log of this partition function. There's some normalization, which I'm not going to discuss in any detail at all. And then we have this functional integral d phi e to the minus integral dt of phi prime squared plus phi squared plus phi to the fourth. This is a very fancy field theory calculation. There's a factor of 2 here. Okay? And the question is, can we do this? Can we evaluate that functional integral? Well, I just showed you how to evaluate an integral, but that was an ordinary integral. Now we have a functional integral here. So we have to evaluate that. Okay? Have you learned how to do this? I don't know if you've learned how to do this. What should we do? How do we go about doing it? The first thing is we say, let's insert a parameter epsilon, because if we don't do that, it's hopeless. What's the second thing we do? Second thing we do is we say, let's put the bracket here. Second thing we do is we say, look, let's add on an integral dt times phi times j. So this is a source, just as we did before. And of course, at the end, we have to set j, which is now a function of t. It's not a number anymore, but it's a function of t. We have to set j, that function, equal to 0. Now, have you seen this? Is this totally new, or is this?
Effective action.
Sorry?
I mean, you're going to the effective action, right? So.
No, I don't want to use a fancy word like that. But all I'm doing is inserting an external source. Okay, and then I'm setting j equal to 0. I haven't changed anything. And think about all the things that we did before. The next thing that we did was to say this is 1 over b, again, log, and there's this normalization factor. Okay, let's put it normalization factor. But we then said, look, that's the hard part of the integral. The quartic in the exponential is what makes it hard. So let's pull that out as e to the minus epsilon. Okay, there's an epsilon here. There's a minus sign here. E to the minus epsilon. But now it's an integral dt of d by dj of t to the fourth power. So this is not an ordinary derivative. It's an exponential of a functional derivative. So we have generalized what we understood very well, ordinary derivatives, to functional derivatives. Now, once again, I ask, have people seen?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll continue. All right, and what we have left in the integral is e to the minus dt, and this is quadratic. So it's Gaussian, and we should be able to do that Gaussian integral. So how are we going to do the Gaussian integral? Well, look at the first term. This is a linear term in phi. This is a quadratic term. I'm going to write that. There's one integral dt, but I'm going to write that as a double integral. I'm going to write that as dt ds times phi of s, phi of t times let's call it d, okay? Where d, you've seen that notation probably, right? So there's a factor. So there's a factor of 1/2, okay? But d means minus d squared. Well, minus d squared dt squared plus 1, d squared dt squared plus 1. Okay, where'd the minus sign come from? From one integration by parts. Right, because we're transferring one derivative onto one field and one derivative onto the other field. So it's minus d squared dt squared on delta of s minus t. That is some matrix. Okay, this is some matrix operator. Okay, and so we have e to the ds dt d times phi of s times phi of t. This is a matrix in here. And then we have this term, which is plus the integral dt phi of t j of t. And now you know what we have to do. We have to complete the square and then do the Gaussian integral. And the whole point is that when you do the Gaussian integral, let's close the bracket. When you do the Gaussian integral, what do you get? You get infinity. Okay, but you have learned something about normalizing functional integrals, and that infinity is exactly what cancels that normalization. Okay, so I'm burying a lot of knowledge that has been squeezed into your brains over the last few weeks, right? But you know what happens when we complete the square. When we complete the square, apart from the Gaussian integral, which is infinity, which cancels this, what does this come down to? It comes down to the term that we had to add and subtract. And the term that we had to add and subtract is a j squared term over d, right? So what is left is e to the 1/2 integral j of s, j of t over d. That's the term that we had to add and subtract. Okay? Okay, I can say more about this next time, but I want to get to the end. So we're almost there. So now, we're at the stage where we can read off the Feynman rules. Because do you see what we have? We have an exponential of a derivative operator operating on a quadratic in J. So I'm going to interpret this as a vertex, which is a 4-vertex. And can you tell me what the amplitude is for the 4-vertex? Minus 4 factorial times epsilon.
Very good.
So it's minus 24 epsilon. That's right. And this is what we write, that funny object here, that is a line having two ends, because there are two powers of j. Okay. Don't forget, this all has to be evaluated at j equals 0. Okay. It's a two-ended line, but the amplitude for that line is 1 over d. What's 1 over d? Okay, so this is what, so I'm going to go very quickly now, but we're going to go back and we'll do this carefully next time. What's 1 over d? D, I said, is this. So 1 over d is 1 over minus d squared dt squared plus 1, whatever that means. Okay, so to make sense out of that, what do? Fourier transform. So if you Fourier transform from time to energy, this would be 1 over e squared plus 1. Okay? And that looks like a propagator. Okay? That's what you learned as a propagator. In fact, it's much more convenient, much, much more convenient, if we then ask, this is the propagator in energy space. If we now do a Fourier transform back, okay, we can find out what the propagator is in time space, and we could do this calculation next time, but what it is 1/2 e to the minus the time in absolute value. Okay, so this is it in energy space, and this is the propagator in time space. And we could do that calculation, but I want to show you the Feynman rules now. The Feynman rules are, for a 4-vertex, so for V4, we write down minus 24 epsilon. And for a line, a 2-line, we write down 1/2 e to the minus. And this is a line going from one time to another time, e to the minus t1 to t2. It's a line that extends from one time to another time. Great! Whoops, there's one last thing. You notice that I've just given you a rule for calculating what's inside the bracket, but what we actually need is the log of that. Does anybody know what this is the last thing, trick, that you need to know? Yeah. Say again?
You only take connected diagonals.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's exactly right. You're exactly right. So taking the log eliminates from the sum of all diagrams, extracts from the sum of all diagrams, just the connected diagrams. Okay? We're ready to go. So I just want to show you that we can get the answer. So show me the first graph, the graph of order epsilon. Well, if it's a graph of order epsilon, it has one vertex. We've already seen this graph before. What's the graph having one four vertex? What does it look like?
Figure eight.
Say again?
A figure eight.
It looks like a figure eight. And this point here is at some time T1. T here, T1. Okay? Now, this is, so now we have to write down the, we have to evaluate the graph. So first I write down the vertex, minus 24 epsilon. Okay? Then I write down a line going from T to T, going all the way from T and back to T. So if I plug in T1 equals T2, the line, this line is 1/2, and this line, the other line, is 1/2. That's all. Okay? Then we need the symmetry number. What's the symmetry number for the graph? 1/8. Okay? So this is the symmetry number, these are the lines, this is the vertex, and now we have a new element, and that is we have to sum over all possible graphs. So there's a graph at this time, and this time, and this time, and this time, and this time. So we have to integrate with respect to time. So the final answer is the integral over all time times 24 over 32, which is 3/4. So this is minus 3/4 epsilon, right? But this is divergent. This is infinity, right? Dt. What is this? It's precisely the volume of space or time, space-time. Okay? So what we have just calculated is the first term of the series, and now what do we have to do to find the ground state energy of order epsilon? We have to divide by V, which makes it finite, and change the sign, which is a minus sign here. So when you divide by V, this is V, divide by V, change the sign, what I get is, this gives me 3/4 epsilon. Okay? And that is precisely this term over here. Check. Okay? Do you see that? Okay? Is that clear? Let's calculate the next term. That'll just take a minute. All we have to write down is the connected graphs. So help me write down, what are the connected graphs having two vertices? So what are the connected graphs? What do they look like? Okay, first graph looks like this, right? What's the second graph look like? Okay, it looks like a Mickey Mouse hat. Okay. Now, first of all, we need the vertices. The vertices for this graph are, there are two vertices, so it's 24 epsilon squared. And for this graph, it's 24 epsilon squared. Okay, next we need the line. Okay, now for the first graph, this is T1 and this is T2. So what do we have? We have four lines going from T1 to T2, four of them. So that gives me 1 over 2 to the fourth power times e to the minus 4 times T1 minus T2. Okay? Times the symmetry number. What's the symmetry number for that graph?
48.
Okay, 48. So we put down, we multiply by 1 over 48. Okay, let's put this. This is 3/4 epsilon. Okay? Now, what about this graph? We have, this is T1. this is t2. We have a line going from t1 to t1, so that gives me 1 half. We have two lines going from t1 to t2, which gives me 1 over 2 squared, e to the minus 2 times t1 minus t2. Okay? And then we have another line going from t2 to t2 to t2, which is just 1 half. And then we have the symmetry number. What is the symmetry number for that graph? Two to the 4, 16, right? So 1 over 16. There we go. And now, finally, what do we have to do? We have to integrate over all t1 and all t2, d1, dt1, dt2. Okay? Now, you notice that t1 and t2 appear, you notice that this is translation invariant? It has to be. It's translation invariant. So one of these integrals is going to give me the volume of space. But the other integral has to actually be evaluated. So in the first case, we get the volume of space times 24 epsilon squared, and it's divided by 16 times 48, right? 16, 48. And we have an integral dt, this is, I'm integrating over the difference, e to the minus 4 absolute t. Okay? And in the second case, we have the volume of all space times 24 epsilon squared divided by, now, the symmetry number you said was 16. There's the 16. And there are 4 factors of 2. That's another factor of 16. Okay? And what is the integral? The integral is an integral over all space times e to the minus 2 times absolute t. Okay, have you followed the calculation? We're now just about done. Okay, how do we do this integral and how do we do that integral? Well, this integral is done from minus infinity to infinity, but this is an even function. So let's say this is 2 times the integral from 0 to infinity. But if we're integrating from 0 to infinity, t is positive. So we can take away the absolute value sign. What is the integral of e to the minus 4t? Say it again. I heard you. Well, quarter. So we've just done the integral, and we got a quarter. Okay. How about this? Instead of integrating from minus infinity to infinity, we'll integrate from 0 to infinity and take away the absolute value signs. Okay, but we have to put in a factor of 2. What is the integral of e to the minus 2t from 0 to infinity? 1 half, so I get a half. So I've just done the integral. Okay? So now we've reduced, so this 2 over 2 is just 1, and 2 over 4 is just a half. So here's our final answer. Let's put it up here. Okay, so let's just do the algebra. The final answer for the first term we have a v. Now let's see, can we simplify this? How about since we have 24 squared, that means that we could divide out, say, a 4 from each of the 24s. So I could reduce that to, let's see, 6 squared over 48, 36 over 48 epsilon squared. 36 over 48 epsilon squared, and another factor of 1 half, 36 over 2 times 48, okay? And for the second integral, we have a v, and then we have, I could divide the 16 into the 24 squared, right? So that would be v over 16. Times 36 epsilon squared. Okay? I hope I did that right. Does it look right? Does it seem okay? Does the arithmetic seem okay? All right. So let's see. We can simplify this I guess, a little bit more. Let's write 36 is 18 over 8. And over here, let's see, we have a 36. If I take a 3 out of the 36, I get 12 over 16, right? I can take a 2 and another 2, which makes it 3 eighths. Okay? So I get V times epsilon squared, and then I have 3 eighths and 18 eighths, which is 21 eighths. Okay? And finally, I have to divide by V, the volume of space, and multiply by minus 1. Change the sign. And so I get minus 21 eighths epsilon squared. Okay? And that is this term. Okay. What is the point here? There's a very big point, and this is the conclusion. Remember how you do quantum mechanics. What we did in quantum mechanics was first to calculate the eigenfunction to zeroth order, the eigenvalue to zeroth order, and then the eigenfunction to zeroth order, and the eigenvalue to first order, and the eigenfunction to first order, and the eigenvalue to second order, and the eigenfunction. So we were switching back and forth. But in quantum field theory, you can't calculate the eigenfunction. It's hopeless. Because in quantum field theory, the Schrödinger equation is an infinitely, is a partial differential equation, not an ordinary differential equation, and it's a partial differential equation in an infinite number of variables. So you can't solve the corresponding Schrödinger equation. It's hopeless. What is the advantage of Feynman diagrams? In one word, notice what we did here. We are calculating the eigenvalue without any reference to the eigenfunction. That's the reason why we use Feynman diagrams. That's it. Okay? In quantum mechanics, we have a tool that we can use. It's called the Schrödinger equation, and we can solve it because it's just a simple differential equation. But in quantum field theory, we can't solve the Schrödinger equation. So we go directly to the answer by means of Feynman diagrams. That's why we use them. And I don't know if that's made clear in most field theory courses. And I don't think that's the key point. Why do we use Feynman diagrams? Because it's hopeless to try to solve the Schrödinger equation. There is a Schrödinger equation, but it's in an infinite dimensional partial differential equation. It's hopeless, just completely hopeless. Okay? So that is the reason, you see what we did? We got term by term in the series for E without ever expanding the eigenfunction. We made no reference to the eigenfunction here. It is absolutely brilliant. That's the reason why we use Feynman diagrams. I don't think that point is made in field theory courses. That's the key reason. Yeah, you have a question.
If you want to calculate the order of energies, do you like an anticontinuation of an energy?
To calculate more energies, yeah. So now, in principle, you could calculate it using analytic continuation. It's very hard to do analytic continuation when you only know a finite number of terms in this series. This is a very non-trivial series. So I don't know how much field theory you learned, but to find the other eigenvalues, they are the poles of the Green's functions. Does that mean, has that been discussed? If you calculate the higher Green's functions, which we haven't talked about, okay, well, I'll discuss this next time if you like. The Green's functions are the correlation functions of many fields. This is a zero-point correlation function. There's no correlation here at all. All there is a ground state energy. Okay, this is just the free energy of the theory. But if we calculate the Green's functions, and then we look at their poles, the poles of the Green's functions are the energy levels of the theory. Okay, those are the energy levels of the particles of the theory. That's because when you are sitting right at the energy, the amplitude of the Green's function should be infinite. If you're not at the right energy, then it isn't infinite, but it's infinite. Okay. So we calculate the Green's function, we find the poles, and the poles come out as series in powers of epsilon. That's how you calculate all the other eigenvalues directly using Feynman diagrams. Okay, it's a project. It's an interesting project. Okay, but that's the sorry. The mass. That's right. The masses of the particles, which are their energies. Remember, mass equals energy. So, right. So those are the poles of the Green's functions. So those are the masses of the particles in the theory. That is to say, those masses that you're determining are the energy levels of the theory. Sure. Mass is energy. So when you calculate those masses, those are the energy, E equals mc squared. C in here has dimensions of 1, so m is E. So those poles are the masses, okay? Okay. I've just given you a complete course in quantum field theory, and I've shown you why you use Feynman diagrams in a quantum field theory. And I did it because in quantum mechanics is really field theory in one dimension. The advantage of what I taught you today is that we didn't need to renormalize. All of these graphs, apart from a factor of V, are finite. That's the advantage. Yeah?
So nobody really talks about the Schrodinger functional equation.
No.
But it should be there also in quantum mechanics because we can rewrite things in path integrals, right?
Sure.
Is it easy to see how that equation
can be derived? But in this case, you see, it's very simple because, we can write down a functional equation, but this is really all you need to calculate the Green's functions. You only need to solve that equation, and that's an easy equation. In principle, it's an easy equation to understand. Nobody knows how to solve it, of course, exactly, but it's an easy the principles of that differential equation are relatively straightforward. Okay, any other questions? Yeah? No? Okay, good. You calculate the first expectation of the five squared.